from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
It's Danny, Dave, and Moore, streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
5 o'clock refresh brought to you by Frostproof Coors Light. Gene Segura is batting leadoff for you tonight. Number two, Guillermo Heredia, followed by Mitch Haniger, Kyle Seager, bumping up a spot in the order to number five, or number four to clean up, and then Ryan Healy, your first baseman. Daniel Vogelback has returned, been brought back up. Nelson Cruz getting the night off, and Scott Servais, when he met with reporters, we'll give you his timeline on D. Gordon here in just a second, but here was the explanation. This is Nelson Cruz's, it'll be his third straight day off after a tough week at the office in which he got hit three times by pitches, twice in the elbow, once in the foot. Here was Scott on his designated hitter status.
I'm going to give Nelson another day. I'm not crazy about it. He thinks he's ready to go tonight. But I got another guy that's kind of been banged up all year, from the twisting his ankle on the step to getting hit by the pitch on the foot, on the elbow a couple times. So, let's give him one more day. We really need, Nelly back in the lineup, no doubt, but we need the good Nelly and being a force, driving in runs, doing what he can do, and just give him another day. Like I said, he could be available maybe late in the game today, but I'd like to stay away from him.
You know, I think one of the things we forget about, we experienced this with Cliff Avril last year or 2 years ago, is you remember that these guys really want to play. And the fact that they had to hold Nelson Cruz back is something that happens a lot. I think a lot of times we get lulled into thinking, well, you know, what does he care? It's a night off. He wants to play. He wants to go out and play. And I think that's awesome to hear every once in a while. And even for Cruz, how old is Cruz now?
It's got to be 38, 39.
He'll be 38 the 1st of July.
Yeah. So, I mean, here this many years in the league, and he still is has to be held back, in other words, to get back out there. So you got him coming. You've got his numbers have to at least go up a little bit. I mean, if you think the drop-off is going to be what it's on pace for now, I mean, I think you don't think very much of Nelson Cruz.
The argument, and Jim, you brought it up, that there's a couple really sort of chilling statistical trends that you would look at the Mariners and say at 27-19, they've kind of defied the odds. They've had a +7 run differential, which is not anywhere close. The Astros, a game and a half ahead of them in the standings, the Astros is
80, plus 98.
Plus 98. So that sort of a +7 run differential usually does not equate to a record of 27-19. On the flip side, you would have the fact that a team who two of their five best hitters, Nelson Cruz and Kyle Seager, haven't really hit all that well yet. So that idea of improvement and their team getting better, well, it's reasonable to expect Nelson Cruz and Kyle Seager to improve the rest of the way, from here on out to be significantly better producers than they've been so far. But for Nelson Cruz, that depends on him getting healthy. And people need to stop hitting him with pitches. Stop hitting Nelson Cruz.
You still advocating the Mariners throwing at the other team?
Yeah. Or doing something. Somebody get mad. Somebody got hit by three different pitches last week.
Nelson Cruz is built like a tight end, too. He could take somebody down.
It's a tough one, though, because I would love it, too, because I'd just like to see a benches-clearing brawl involving the Mariners and just have a bunch of roundhouse rights followed by some left jabs and some uppercuts. That'd be fun to see that. But I haven't seen one single pitch that I thought that they were intentionally trying to hit the Mariners.
I don't really care if they're trying to or not.
Yeah. If we get hit, you get hit.
And when you commit a violation, they're like, did you really mean to break the law? Doesn't matter. You broke the law. You hit him. He got hit three times last week. Yeah. Enough's enough.
You know what would really suck is if Nelson Cruz finally did charge the mound and he gets out there and kind of had like these little wrist slaps and like a windmill and just like the daintiest, worst fighter ever.
You know what that would have been like? It would have been like when Alonzo Mourning and Patrick Ewing, didn't they fight? Or was it? It was definitely Alonzo Mourning because Van Gundy ended up holding on to his leg. But I thought Alonzo Mourning was one of the like legit tough guys in basketball. And then he started throwing punches, and I was like, that's awful. That's absolutely. It was Larry Johnson in Alonzo Mourning. And they started throwing punches at each other. I'm like, neither one of those guys can fight.
Grandmama couldn't fight.
No, either. They were terrible. Like, oh, it was just awful and awkward. And I'm like, what? How'd you get to this point and be that tough? And You can't. You look like me. Oh, that's embarrassing.
I don't think we'd see that from Cruz.
No, I don't think so either.
He'd probably pick the pitcher up, hold him directly overwards, and then just drop him.
Yeah, we'll
break
see.
Him.
We'll see with him though. 3 days off, and Vogelback hitting seventh as the DH. But looking at Cruz's numbers, 1 for his last 14. It's just not that. But he's looked really out of sorts. His timing's been off. How much it has to do with the injury? I always think about his age, and yet he's fought that off to this point. He's got 7 home runs, 18 runs batted in, but this might be one of those years where you look at Cruz and you go, okay, it was in 2018 where he finally hit lower than 30 home runs and you started to see the decline. Maybe not, but 1 for 14 with 6 strikeouts the last few games for him.
What did he take his first pitch over the wall?
Yeah, it was his very first one. It was the homer off of Corey Kluber.
Yeah, Kluber. So, looking at this lineup still, and also, I still think it looks great. Somebody texts in, it sucks. And I'm like, it doesn't suck. Gene Segura, then Guillermo Heredia, Mitch Haniger, Kyle Seager, you expect to come back, Healy, Vogelbach, Zanino, Gamble, Beckham. But, Guillermo Heredia, you said this earlier, Danny, about him making his way, sort of his breakthrough into being a everyday player. And sometimes, certain athletes are different. They react differently. And sometimes when you let a guy get into a rhythm, then he starts to fit in. And Heredia has never really gotten into a rhythm, and he's never really been given that chance. And I'm thinking now he's going to get that chance, and that might be something that's comforting to him and that he settles into. But even without that, he's had plenty of at-bats this year. I mean, he's had 60 at-bats, and the guy's 283 right now. He's got more walks than strikeouts, and he's got a couple of doubles. He's got 2 home runs. I mean, I'm really excited to see him play every day.
He's the one guy on this team that could play himself into an everyday job. Like, I think that when the season started, he was the 4th outfielder, and you looked at if Gamble doesn't hold on to the everyday left field job, maybe Heredia ends up platooning with him there. He's the one that the suspension of Robinson Cano is going to open up an opportunity for the time being where he gets an opportunity to audition as your everyday center fielder. And so far, it's only 3 games, but it's looked really good. He's looked really good in that spot. I love the energy he plays with. In fact, I love the energy he plays with so much, I thought that I was sold on the idea of trying him every day, even though there's not a great deal of evidence that, hey, this is the next step for him, but he's got the chance he's going to make the most of it. D. Gordon is out, placed on the 10-day disabled list, retroactive to Sunday, and Scott Service gave reporters before the game started down there in Oakland, gave them a synopsis, a standing of where D is in his recovery.
D hurt his toe on the last road trip. It kind of really bothered him up in Toronto. He's trying to play through it. He had some x-rays taken up there. He knew there was a small little crack in it, but it's one of those things you try to manage it best you can, and then he kind of re-aggravated it on the homestand, and you saw the game on Sunday. It was really bothered him. So with speed being such a big part of his game, I just think it's the best thing to do is let that thing calm down. I don't think it's going to completely heal in 9 or 10 days, but certainly calm down enough to the point hopefully we can get him back sooner than later, and as soon as the 10 days are up, I'm hoping to have him back out there with us.
Dave, what do you imagine them doing in treatment to calm something down?
Icing it.
I imagine them doing this.
No, Danny. Trying to get rid of the inflammation in there.
Okay.
Yeah. So you got to ice. That's a tough one, icing your foot, because you got to stick the toe down in there. Because usually when you go into a cold tub, they put these little they're like neoprene sleeves over your toes. So the water, almost like a wetsuit for your toes, basically. Because
you guys have koozies for your toes when you get in the cold tub?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because your toes get really cold, man. But he's got to ice his toe. It's painful, I'm telling you. That and then another part of your body when it goes into the cold water. And I always thought that they should have the little cozies for that other part of your body when you go into the cold tub. But they didn't have that because I had a groin injury 1 year, and I'd have to go in Denver. I'd walk in at 6:30 in the morning, and it'd be snowing, and it'd be 20 degrees. And then I would have to go and get in my shorts and get into a cold tub. Not fun. But anyway.
Could you wear a wetsuit where you just cut out the part around your midsection?
Yeah.
So it'd be a top and a bottom? But you'd have no middle part?
Oh, you mean cut out the one part of your body that actually suffers the most
That's
when
correct.
You get in the cold water?
That's correct.
It's the reverse Donald Duck, we call that.
How long do you have to sit in one of those tubs?
It was like 20 minutes, 25 minutes.
How do you even breathe?
Well, eventually you get used to it.
In and out through your nose?
No, but seriously, you get to a point where it numbs up and then you don't feel it anymore. But it's painful. It's tough. I mean,
especially when you don't have cozies for your toes.
Yeah, or other bodily parts. So, yeah, this is what they're trying to do. I felt a lot better coming out of this with what Service said, because he said, number one, he heard it up in Toronto, and that's when it started bothering him. He's played through that. And so now, you know, get it to calm down, you know, just get the swelling out of there, and hopefully, yeah, and maybe it will bother him a little bit this year. But, you know, 10 days right now, that's not that big of a deal. I just, you know, I saw the fracture thing, and I thought, oh, boy, here we go again. But this thing actually sounds fairly encouraging. And, you know, over the next 10 days, I think they can live without D.
And here is Scott Service asked about how long he expects this to be.
Well, I don't see it being that way. D wants to be out there in the worst way, but like I said, speed is his game, and but you certainly saw it in the ball game on Sunday. You know, him taking off Steeland, kind of limping around there to score the winning run. You know, we just want to make sure he's 100%. We're going to need him. I just thought the best way was to try to calm this thing down right now.
Well, he's 6 for his last 41. He might just be going through a slump, or maybe his toe has affected him in the batter's box, but dropping from 340 to 304. And I'm just wondering, when he comes back, now you would think that he would just go to second base because that was the plan after Cano went out with the suspension, and it seems like it'd be better if you got a toe injury playing second base in center field. But what if Ferretti is not playing well in center field, if he starts slumping, and if Beckham plays well at second, would you move Gordon back to center field?
No, I'd go get a different center fielder. Like, I think the option for Heredia at this point is that if Heredia can't be your everyday center fielder, then you go get a different outfielder. And you got $12 million. You got $12 million of found money this year. You know, Ryan Roland-Smith talked to us about pitchers to go out and get. He brought up Cole Hamels, which is an idea that I think is fantastic. Texas is going to be out of this. The standings, if you stop and look at it, the standings are really weird right now because you've got a lot of bad teams. Now, a lot of those bad teams are in the AL Central, and someone's going to have to win that hazmat situation of a division. But you've got a lot of teams that are going to be in positions to sell, whether it's Baltimore or Texas, and that idea of being able to do that. I think that D. Gordon, especially if you're talking about a foot injury, something with his toe, you don't want to increase the amount of ground he's going to have to cover. Now, the good news, and this is from Scott Service, when he was asked, said that surgery is not something that's on the table.
Surgery? No, 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 no. Don't say that word. Don't say that word. That never got brought up at all. No, it's something that should heal over time, but, you know, the more stress, you know, he had some few plays, you know, the pop-up he went out in short right field the other night, you know, jumping for balls, different things like that, that, you know, just aggravated it more, and it wasn't getting any better, so that's why he let it calm down.
Who's at the press conference whistling in the background? What in the world is that?
I mean, it might have been the sound playing there. You got a big basketball game happening next door at the Oakland Coliseum.
Might have been Shannon.
Maybe Shannon was just whistling. Yeah. I'm sure, yeah. No, that was not Shannon Dreher. But you also got, well, look, the A's are going to be the toughest part of this 10-game stretch that D. Gordon's going to miss, because they're playing Texas and then also the Twins, who are sub-500, and everybody in the AL Central is sub-500. So, yeah, this sounds incredibly encouraging to me. And also, just think about what you saw out of him. I'm assuming that the point of when it hurt the worst would have been the last game he played in. And in the last game he played in, he stole second and scored. So I think he'll be fine. Yeah, the surgery thing, I mean, come on. Yeah, no way. No way. I like how Service jumped at that. Like, oh, don't even say that. Yeah, it's a dirty word around here.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see Segura leading off, though, and he's certainly been hot. I think he's like 429 his last 11 games or something like that. So you're not going to lose a whole lot there, but you miss the 1-2 punch that you have with Gordon. And Service also said that he's got Heredia hitting second today, but it sounds like Segura is going to stay leadoff no matter if it's a lefty or a righty, but he's going to change things up depending on the matchups. A
couple of different points, and this goes back to something we brought up to change direction with John Clayton. And the injury today, was it a Philadelphia Eagles linebacker?
Yeah, blew out his ACL.
And John brought up the fact that you get about six to a dozen of these each year. And Dave, you brought up the fact that those kind of injuries never happened. You can't remember them happening when you played. I think that's an interesting sort of observation or discussion about whether season-ending injuries in non-contact practices, because there's no debates about the dangers of playing football, but that idea that we've had this off-season torn ligaments is something new is something that it made me stop and think of, like, if that's the case, why would that be happening?
Yeah, well, the way I'm not a doctor, and somebody texted in earlier that is a trainer, an athletic trainer, and they said 60-70% are non-contact ACL. But the tendons are at the end of your muscles, and that's what attaches your muscles to your bones. The ligaments are connective, you know, like the ACL, MCL, lateral collateral ligament. And so, you know, I don't think you can't strengthen those necessarily. You can your tendons, but maybe I'm wrong. But one theory, and this is a couple of texters have been texting in, I've been texting back to them, that I wonder if we're getting to the point where they're training so much that they're outgrowing their bodies. Like, does maybe the human body have like a speed limit or a point where it's like your muscles are so strong and you're training so hard that you're actually blowing through, you know, the ligament part, because that's what an ACL is. It's a ligament. You can't make your ligament stronger.
What if you just went back to the old way of doing it with full pads going 2 days, and maybe there would be fewer injuries if you were playing, practicing that way?
Honestly, it makes me wonder. It really does. It might be one of these counterintuitive things, and everybody would say, well, that's crazy. Why would you think that you would have more or less injuries when you have more contact? But I do think that you get into hitting shape and you get used to things, and you also see a big difference in the beginning of the year where the guys just haven't hit as much and they haven't played that much together. So I do think there's some value in it. But look, I don't know. I've just heard a lot of guys that are my age, and I call it the old man complaint. Ron Darling, who's a color analyst for the New York Mets, was talking about, you know, the Iron Glenn type of trainers and stuff like that, and there's guys getting hurt and all these weird non-contact situations where you go, what's going on here?
Well, talk about obliques, right?
Like,
the oblique injury in baseball, I think it's really over the last 10 years that we've talked about that. Now, it's not like that activity that causes the oblique injury is new. It's the same thing as the guys have been doing. So there's two possibilities. One is that we're more refined in our ability to detect an injury now. And so the treatment for it, you're picking it up and saying, okay, instead of just playing through something that would obviously compromise your performance, you need to let this heal. The other possibility is that people are doing things now that are subjecting themselves to increasing injury risk. And as you were talking about the idea of off-season workouts, if guys are blowing out a knee ligament in the off season as they start to do it, does that mean that they've gotten focused on strength more, that they've gotten sort of that you work yourself into a better condition, and that ends up almost putting yourself at risk once you start playing and doing part in the normal drills? It doesn't seem like you'd change your body that much in the 2 or 3 months since the season ended, but it's really strange to me to think that we're seeing injuries that didn't happen 20 years ago.
Yeah, these things, like, remember the sports hernia? You know, where did that come from? I don't ever remember. I had a hernia when I was 4 years old because I picked up one of those big cement blocks. I was at 4 years old trying to pick.
You had a hernia when you were four?
Yeah, and my mom had to take me in, and I had hernia surgery, apparently.
Did they ask, like, what was your young son doing? And he's like, well, he's a little Hercules baby, so he picked up a gigantic rock.
You know those cement piers that you put a post on when you want? Yeah, I was trying to pick one of those
at
up.
At four, you were picking one
Why
of those
in the
up?
World were you
it
doing
won.
That?
Yeah, I lost.
It did.
Yeah. But, you know, look, that's the only time. I mean, a hernia is like, I remember my counselor and tight end coach, Charlie Spina, at Wooster High School, he sneezed, and he was an older guy. He sneezed one time and blew out a couple of hernias, you know. And that was something that either little kids or old men got. You don't have guys dropping right and left because of hernias. Like, where'd that come from?
Why did you move the pier block?
Danny, I was four. I don't remember. My mom actually told me the story. I don't know why. My mom has lots of good stories about me.
Seriously, I'm going to find out more about that one the next time that
you heard about the one the first time that I wanted to go to the bathroom like a big boy. My mom likes telling me that one.
Yes, that's correct.
He was trying to go number one, and out came number two.
That's correct. All at once,
standing up at the toilet there. So yeah.
My
mom likes to embarrass me, but she told me this story, and I don't even remember picking up the little cement beer. Yeah.
I've got one that my sister always talks about, and that's where I think I was like five or something like that. And I think it hurt one time when I went to the bathroom, so I was scared to go the next time. And so I decided to go into my little cash register in the bedroom. And, you know, it was like one of those little play school cash registers. And so I went in there and just closed it up and pretended like nothing happened.
Would you call that the first gold machine?
something like that, yes. Yes, I would, Danny.
It's Dan and David Moore. We're going to tell you about the golden touch we have. It has nothing to do with Jim's urinating into a cash register. That's coming up next.
This is Danny David Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
It's a 5 o'clock refresh brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. Getting back to a conversation we had earlier when Zlatan Ibrahimovic slapped a member of the Montreal Impact from behind, and the guy who got slapped then rolled around on the ground as if he were near death, prompting Dave to wonder exactly if the soccer players feel proud of their embellishments, how they feel about it. From the 425, if you get wronged in an American sport, you punch him in the face when the ref isn't looking, not cry foul like a baby for the ref to see. Mm-hmm. And I actually think that there's some truth to that. It is, I always see, like, if someone does something underhanded to you, that opens the door for you to do something underhanded back to them.
Well, did they say in America?
Yes.
Like, is this, I mean, I see this, we can't say this about the rest of the world, but I guess you can in Europe. I mean, whoever plays soccer, I see that all the time where there's these overly dramatic, somebody texted in, there's a Key and Peele thing where a guy gets tripped, the one guy, I think it was Key, gets tripped, and then he dies because he's rolling around on the ground, and really all he got was a little tiny ankle injury. It's just so, I don't get what that sort of culture is in soccer, and maybe it's just soccer. Do you see American soccer players doing that?
Yes, American soccer players.
Okay,
definitely
so it's
do.
A soccer thing,
correct?
Not a non-American thing.
But
you gain an advantage by doing that, though.
Correct.
But so, you have to like put yourself out there as a kind of a wimp, and you're acting. You're overacting. I mean, some of those things, Jim. Have you ever seen where like a guy hits a guy in the nose, and then all of a sudden he waits like a second, then he falls down on the ground. I mean, how do you live with yourself?
But in NBA games, we see that kind of stuff all the time too.
You see floppers.
Yes.
Yeah, and they're roundly criticized, are they not?
Generally,
but
it's been a huge problem, and it's actually, I trace it back. I think it was with the infiltration. I blame Ginobili, who's Argentinian, and came over here from soccer. Like, I think that it is soccer's pestilence has been passed on. It's like a contagious disease that was then transmitted because of the same sort of thing of like, you can gain an advantage. It used to be really funny. Ray Allen used to always talk about Reggie Miller starting the flopping.
Oh, yeah, he was good at that.
Because Ray didn't flop. Like, Ray didn't, like, he would try to make the shot. He didn't try to, he wouldn't kick his legs out. He wouldn't do those sort of things. And you see it, there are floppers in the league, and Ginobili was terrible at it. But that idea, and I think generally there are people that it's like, stop flopping. Like, don't flop. Don't do that. That there still is sort of a, culturally, I think American basketball players resent elements of the flopping that happens.
But do you think in, like, Europe that there's some special sort of adulation for athletes that can really act like, wow, look at, he really sold that. He barely got ticked on the shin, and he's rolling around on the ground like he's on his deathbed. That's great. I mean, this is my favorite player. I love him. Really? Is that what, do you think that
I'm not
the
sure.
The soccer world, do they hold those guys in high esteem? Like, man, he's a great flopper, a great actor. I don't know. I couldn't live with myself.
It's an interesting question because you do get a strategic advantage from it. You see it sometimes. We don't see it in football. But I guess the closest you would get in football is situations, pass interference where somebody kind of exaggerates the effect of the contact that's
that
there.
And
you
wide
see
receivers,
it. There was a UFC fighter, Josh Koscheck, who pretended he faked getting kneed in the head when his knee was down. His knee in the UFC, if you're a downed opponent, if your knee is on the ground or your elbow and you get kneed in the head, it's an illegal strike. And he got kneed in the head, or it looked like it, because he liked how he reacted and he got given time to recover. They show the replay, and Joe Rogan, the color commentator, is like, yeah, he might want to get up off the ground because that knee didn't land. And it was generally like the reaction it is. It's very funny. It just amused me, the idea that an open hand slap could knock someone to the turf. The Mariners are getting set to play Oakland. We're going to have the pregame show for you coming up. We didn't interview any Mariners today, which is disappointing for them, because what we've discovered over the course of the year is that we tend to have a little bit of the golden touch. It started, and the best example is James Paxton in an interview with us on Friday before his start in Toronto. We brought up the very thing that happened. Well, Jim brought up the very thing that happened.
Do you think about throwing a no-hitter?
No. I think that just kind of happens if it happens. Someone once told me that, you know, one hitters and two hitters are skill, and then no hitters are luck.
Swing, and a one hopper to third. Seager's got it, toss across. Ball game is over. James Paxton has just thrown a no-hitter. The big lefty is getting mobbed out of the mound. The lefty from Lander, British Columbia, has thrown the sixth no-hitter in the history of the Seattle Mariners franchise.
That's pretty good. Pretty good impression. Being able to ask him about the no-hitter, then having it happened. And, well, it wasn't just a coincidence, because we've also talked to Ryan Healy on a day that things turned out pretty well for him. Ryan Healy's with us. Ryan, how are you, man?
I'm great. How are you guys?
We're doing very well. It's got to feel good to get back home. But, man, that was a heck of a road trip you guys put together.
That was fun. You know, obviously I wasn't a part of the first couple stints there, but joining the team on that last leg, the fourth game, stint we had in Cleveland, that was a lot of fun, playing really good baseball, so fun to be a part of.
2-1. Swung on and launched to left field. This is hammered. Back is Pinder. He's at the wall, looking up. It is gone. Into the bullpen. Ryan Healy going yard against his former team, rounding the bases for the fourth time this season. And the Mariners on top, 1-0, as Healy goes yard again.
Okay, how many more of these before Mariner players just start lining up? Like, we got to go on the Danny, Dave, and Moore show.
Or it becomes a fix, like a problem. Like, Kyle Seager's not really hitting right now. Let's get him out to Edgar's Cantina on Friday before the game, because we'll get him fixed that way.
I think we got to try it. We got to get Seager on Friday.
We'll see exactly how it is. You believe in karma, right, Jim?
Bad karma and good karma.
So do you believe that this is sort of like the karma for the smoke and lock of the week? That the smoke and lock of the week has been so historically bad that we were due to have a run of good luck when it came to our impact on baseball?
How was the smoke and lock this last year?
This last year one was game better than usual. And what, did you forget about the Super Bowl where I gave you the correct winner and the over-under? I gave you both.
Was it the time you predicted overtime? Overtime, just like you.
Overtime?
Yeah, that was, but that was just because you kept predicting that until it happened, right?
Yeah, that's true. But no, it's, I believe in what's happening here, that we might have an influence on the outcomes of games. And I'm going to start wagering on it, in fact.
And we had Gene Segura that was with us this past Friday. Is Gene Segura, the Seattle Mariners. Gene, what's up?
What's up? What's up, guy? What's going on? Do you still get, like, butterflies or in your stomach before a game?
Exactly. I mean, I kind of feel it sometimes, a lot of times in the baseball game.
The 2-2 pitch, swung on, hard hit up the middle. That's through for a base hit. Here comes Zunino rumbling around third. The throw home on a hop is late. He slides. He's safe. And this game is tied. Gene Segura.
The windup and again the 3-2 pitch, swing and a well hit ball deep into the gap in left center field. Going and going. Goodbye, baseball. Gene Segura with his third home run of the season. And the right-hander's 1-2 on the way to Segura. Swinging a ground ball fair inside the bag at first on the right field line. Gordon waved around third, heading home. He scores. Gene Segura with a walk-off single to win it.
Segura, he was fantastic. But we didn't interview Mitch Haniger, and he had a really good weekend as well.
He was fantastic.
Yeah, but those two guys together, you know, this is why, look, the D. Gordon thing is disappointing. The Cano thing, of course, is disappointing. But, you know, you're getting it from those guys. And if Ryan Healy, and he's going to be playing against his old team here, maybe he'll get some inspiration out of that. I think the lineup looks pretty good.
Here's the other thing, is if the Mariners keep playing well, it's an incredible sign for your future. Because Cruz isn't signed beyond this season. Cano, I would think that most, he's not on the uptick in his career. You're hoping he holds on for as long as he can. D. Gordon's 30. If you're able to still play successful, these are younger players that you have that are cost controlled and under franchise control for a number of years. It's a great sign. And having Segura, who's signed to an extension, and Mitch Haniger, who's still ways away from free agency, those are all really, really positive things and reasons we'll be watching tonight. We're going to find out what we've learned today. We'll do that next.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
What we learned brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
Some gusto today.
That's right.
Can I give a shout out to my beautiful, lovely wife, Shannon? Been married 25 years today.
Oh,
25 year anniversary. The nicest person I know.
She'd congratulations.
Have to be. Yeah.
She would have to be.
Seriously, congratulations. That's awesome.
Thanks.
That's right.
I didn't really do anything.
No,
it was
you
all
did.
Her.
I think as someone who's been married less than half that amount of time, I think those are impressive commitments that people bail out of oftentimes at the slightest patch of trouble. I think that's really cool. I'm happy for you guys.
My parents' 40th is this weekend. So you guys were
nice.
Same May weddings.
Yeah, that's right.
May weddings. We had Brian Roland Smith on today, and we learned how to speak Australian.
Yeah, Ryan, I can't take all these injuries. This will drive a guy to the bottle-o for a slab. Am I right?
Exactly. Straight to the bottle-o, get you a slab, get a couple cans in you, and you'll be all right, mate. There you go.
There you go.
You've been looking it up.
Well, I'm just trying to make you feel at home, Ryan.
Wait,
you
know? What the hell is the bottle-o?
Bottle-o's a liquor store.
Did you go online to reach for that one? Where'd you get it?
Ryan, of course he did. Of course I did. Yeah, 100 Australian words. When he called me mate, I was like, oh, okay. He gets it. I wasn't sure. I tried it out on Tim Woolley, who's the bartender out at Edgar's.
Australian. What's a slab?
Slab's a case.
Oh.
Case of beer.
Get a slab?
The bottle-o.
Yeah.
I like dog's breakfast, too.
Looks like the dog's breakfast.
It's a mess, supposedly. And then Tim said that's also a way that people can describe the opposite sex if they're really mean.
That's terrible. Yeah. Do you know what the dog's breakfast was at my house this morning? Watermelon rinds, bananas, and a little bit of kibble.
Really? Danny's dog eats watermelon rinds.
Yeah, she prefers the skin left on. She sits there and chomps them, and she loves bananas. Bananas are like her favorite thing in the world.
Yeah, usually dogs won't eat fruit.
Yeah, she loves bananas. Cucumbers also big with her. Crispy and juicy is what she says. Yeah, watermelon's become a real treat.
That's what she says?
Yeah, that's right. You can tell. I read it in her eyes, Jess.
Benson likes cucumbers, too. We also learned today that Wyman was a feisty young four-year-old.
Yeah, these things like, remember the sports hernia? You know, where did that come from? I don't ever remember. I had a hernia when I was 4 years old because I picked up one of those big cement blocks. I was at 4 years old trying to pick.
You had a hernia when you were four?
Yeah. And my mom had to take me in, and I had hernia surgery, apparently.
Did they ask, like, what was your young son doing? He's like, well, he's a little Hercules baby, so he picked up a gigantic rock.
You know those cement piers that you put a post on when you want? Yeah, I was trying to pick one of those
up. At four, you were picking one of those up?
Why in the world were you
doing that? It won. Yeah, I lost.
I guess it did.
Yeah.
That's impressive, though, that you were trying to do it at four.
Jim asked me why or what were you thinking. I don't remember. 4 years old. Yeah, I don't know.
Do you remember anything from when you were four?
Little glimpses here and there. I kind of remember that. But I went on a kick of a bunch of injuries after that. Like, I was going to the emergency room, like, once every 2 months. And my mom said that if, you know, you had a kid like that now, they'd be investigating you. because, you know, it was like every 2-3 weeks I'd come in with need stitches, broke both my arms at the same time.
How'd you do that?
I bailed out of a swing backwards and fell forward on and had one like full length cast and one half length cast. Broke both of my arms at the same time.
What time of year?
It was right. I was in kindergarten, just graduating kindergarten.
So for the whole summer, you had two broken arms. Couldn't swim, couldn't do anything.
Nothing. Yeah.
Would you let me come up with a full medical history of you, like all of the different injuries that you've had?
You got an evening to sit down?
Yeah. I'd like to do this.
Okay.
We'll diagram it. It'll be something we'll put up on 710sports.com. It'll be a game of operation, except instead of the guy with the little red nose, it's going to be Wyman.
I like this idea.
Take out wrenched ankle.
Yes, exactly. Bread basket.
Oh, there was wrenched ankles.
We also learned that Jim has a story.
I've got one that my sister always talks about, and that's where I think I was like 5 or something like that. And I think it hurt one time when I went to the bathroom, so I was scared to go the next time. And so I decided to go into my little cash register in the bedroom. And, you know, it was like one of those little play school cash registers. And so I went in there and just closed it up and pretended like nothing happened.
Would you call that the first gold machine?
something like that. Yes. Yes, I would, Danny.
It's Danny David Moore. We're going to tell you about the golden touch we have. It has nothing to do with Jim's urinating into a cash register. That's coming up next. What we learned is that I had the wrong emission that was at the wrong product that was there.
Yeah, but what was in the cash register is about the same as the contents in the gold machine.
Yeah, Jim made a deposit. A solid deposit into the cash register.
It wasn't jack squat.
Still to this day, my sister will bring that story up, and it's one of those earliest recollections that you have. And I used to suck my fingers and not my thumb. I would suck my two fingers, and I had a blue night-night that I called my blanket. Yeah, I did.
You called it night-night?
Yeah, it was my night-night, yeah.
Do you still have it?
My mom might have it somewhere.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. No, I love that night-night. I did. I love sucking my fingers, too.
Little Jimmy has a
Everybody else sucked their thumb, but I was a finger sucker.
Do you still do it sometimes when you get upset?
I bite my fingernails, but no, I don't suck my fingers anymore.
That's good.
It's probably a good sign.
I've grown up, Dave.
It's healthy. No. It's healthy.
Yeah, we've all progressed here.
Well,
have we?
How many times do one of us turn around and go, are we grown-ups?
Yeah, and we're like, no.
No, nope. Not one of us.
Definitely not from 3 to 7 p.m. each and every day.
No.
That's not true. Want to thank Ryan Roland Smith for joining us. It's always fun for our cultural exchange program. He broadens our horizons as we go down under with him and try to work in new vocabulary words. It's also good to catch up with the professor, John Clayton, from the owners' meetings, where maybe we'll get some clarity tomorrow on exactly what's going down. Jessamine put together our greatest hits.
People seem to think we were very serious about that, by the way.
Which, the self-aggrandizing
thing? Yeah, that we really think taking credit for all those great things.
Well, maybe we should have put some that we missed on, too, just to show people that we weren't taking ourselves
Plenty
too seriously. Curtis Rogers is on the board for us. And for the three of us, we love doing this each and every day. And we thank you for listening and making that possible. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 3 on Danny, Dave, and More.